96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas. This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
Next Level Solutions. Next Level Solutions. Solutions. At Next Level Solutions, we have organizations to understand and strategically resolve governance, risk, compliance, regulatory, finance, and operational challenges, maximize their performance, and grow. Next Level Solutions, a dynamic consultancy built on experiential knowledge. For further details on our service offerings, visit nlsolutionsbahamas.com or call 376-8951. Next Level Solutions. Practical solutions delivered.
You're now in the Essential Zone, where we seek to be informative, inspirational, enlightening, and dynamic. But more importantly, we seek to be fair and balanced. There comes a time when the game tolerates no spectators, only players. There comes a time when we must recognize that our individual aspirations shape our collective destiny. There comes a time when getting despite the risks, despite the challenges, regardless of the cause, is simply the right thing to do. There comes a time when we must find our hearts, find our soul, and pursue our purpose for the greater good of all, for country, for humanity. There comes a time when we must manifest our true greatness. Yes, there comes a time, and that time is now. So let's get down to the essentials. The Essentials, serious radio for serious people committed to advancing the national conversation. And good evening and welcome to The Essentials, The Reset. I'm your host, Hubert Edwards. And we are going to have ourselves a conversation this evening. We had a scheduled guest all the way from Rwanda. But sometimes things happen. I'm sure that possibly sleep have overtaken her, or there are some other logistics issues at play. May we're always ready to pivot. We're always ready to move on to something else. So this evening, given the fact that our guest isn't here, and we definitely will have to roll her back to another time because, you know, it was going to be an exciting conversation. I can guarantee you that. Let's talk about some of the things which have been happening locally. It's been a while since I've really focused on any of these things. We've been doing a number of shows which involve some international colleagues and friends. And with the help and support of my good friend Landlord, we have been able to reach out to some of his colleagues, especially in the music fraternity and from the Christian community. We've done some couple persons from the United States replayed last week. We interviewed Lemmy Battles, who was a former lead singer of the Chicago Mass Choir. That was a phenomenal interview. Enjoyed simply at the age of 70 plus. I think she says she's 77 or 76, some age like that. She can sing, sings very well. So let's switch. And if you want to be a part of this conversation, the numbers are 323-6232-325-4316, 325-4259, or the text line is 422-4796. So why not let us look at some of the local issues? Some of the things which are happening right here have happened over maybe a couple of weeks into days. Other persons would have discussed them. I didn't, so we'll take a stab at it as a means of filling in this evening. So three things I want to touch on. One is the shuffle of the cabinet. That could get interesting. Two is to talk about some rollover risk of Bahamas debt, as was reported in one of the local dailies and coming out of a report from the IDB. we want to talk about the performance of tourism and kind of tie that into the other two. So we're going to start with the second one first. And that is the issue of rollover risk faced by the Bahamas. So in a recent report, the IDB indicated that the Bahamas may be somewhat challenged because it is kind of facing a deteriorating credit environment, credit market. And in its report, the IDB highlighted the fact that over the next few years, the Bahamas is going to be faced with a number of maturities in terms of debt outstanding, external debt outstanding. And it will have to renegotiate or find replacement debt for those. And it is raising, not an alarm, kind of signaling that, you know, this may not be 100% comfortable for the Bahamas. Now, I was asked by one reporter, what were my thoughts on this? And my initial reaction was that the way the IDB put it, there certainly was no question that there was a rollover risk at play. And by rollover risk, we simply mean that if you have a loan which is going to come due and you have no intention of repaying that loan, the extent to which you are able to reschedule, renegotiate, and get a new loan to replace that represents the rollover risk that you face. So if you can do that very easily because things are going well, you're well-heeled, you have a lot of money, you have a good job, good business, there's a high cash flow, then we would say that your level of rollover risk would be low. If on the other, to find your way to make it through from day to day, and the bank is always calling you and persons are saying, well, you know, you don't have the money, then that risk increases. And so with these maturity taking place, starting in 2024, all the way up to, I think, 2032, that's over kind of six to eight years. And the amounts which are going to be maturing ranging from, I think, $250 million up to a high of 1 year, there's $550 million. So my initial reaction to that was the Bahamas should be able to replace $250 million easily. I really don't see the country having a problem. And if we listen to the financial secretary, Mr. Simon Wilson, he indicated as much that there is no concern. They've already tested the market, and it's very likely that they will be able to replace. He said that there is a high level of confidence that the Bahamas will be able to reschedule those loans. So on one hand, the IDB say, well, you know, there's a little bit of a concern. On the other hand, the financial secretary say, well, you know, don't worry too much because we have this covered. But I think there is agreement. I think there is agreement, even you would get this even from the financial secretary or anybody in amongst the policymakers, that at this point in time, as we speak, the Bahamas' rollover debt is, rollover risk, sorry, is heightened. So while on one hand, I argue, and I will argue this continuously, consistently, that the Bahamas replaced $250 million or as much as $550 million in any one calendar year or fiscal year, shouldn't be super duper difficult. The issue though is that that replacement will come at a cost. And that's the biggest challenge faced with the Bahamas. So when the when the IDB outlined in its report that the Bahamas is going to be challenged because of deteriorating credit market, I responded to the reporter that, you know, I don't think it's really the credit market per se. Chances are, maybe they meant the credit market response to the Bahamas. And that's basically what it is. At this point in time, based on the level of the level at which the risk, the loans are trading or trending, it's indicative of the fact that if the Bahamas was to go to the market on the normal terms, and by normal terms, I mean the Bahamas goes to the market and say, here I am, the Bahamas, with all of my state of affairs presented to you. Can you lend me some money? Lend me $100 million. The market is likely to say, yes, we are going to lend you this $100 million, but this is the rate that we are going to lend you at, and that rate is likely to be, at this point in time, in double digits. The options are for the Bahamas to go to the market with the support of agencies like IDB or some other agency, and where you get some credit aiding, credit enhancements. And so the Bahamas could, you know, based on a program, based on agreement, leverage the creditworthiness of those organizations, which then results in it securing loans at a lower level. But right out those type of credit enhancement, the Bahamas is going to be challenged to do that. And so every time we think about where we are as a country, where the economy is, we have to bear in mind the significant pressures which are being exerted in the background because of the stock of debt that we currently have. It is significant, it's causing challenges, and it will cause challenges into the near future. I think that is accepted. I don't believe that anyone, certainly anyone near the center of the administration, the center of policymakers, would really argue. Now, somebody may not come out and say that very loud publicly, and I can understand and appreciate that. But there ought to be no argument that there's going to be challenges, and there's currently challenges, and there are going to be challenges. So my response was, hey, let's step back from this issue. Let's step back from this question. Let's step back from the report, and let's try and kind of put the information into a different perspective, a perspective which I consider to be the real perspective. You don't have to. The IDB didn't necessarily put it that way. But from my perspective, the real issue is simply, at the end of the day, it comes down to the Bahamas' credit worthiness. Can the Bahamas, at this point in time, based on all the revenue that the government takes in, afford or signal to the market that it has the ability and it represents a good enough risk, credit risk, where it should be lent monies at a lower rate than what the indicative rate is of its debt at the moment? Is the Bahamas in that position? And the easy answer to that is not quite, not at this very, very moment. Because in order to make an assessment of that position, we have to look at credit ratings. And the credit ratings currently says that we are not that good. We're not in good stead. But that's not the total end of the story. There are other aspects to it. Because the rating is what it is. And there is the other question. Do you have, would you have sufficient revenue to make the payments for the loan and to be able to manage the cost of your borrowings? Is there demonstrated revenue streams, sustainable, not just 1 year, you know, in 2023, 24, we may have a good year. Maybe that will fall off in 2024, 25, 26. I'm just trying to explain how we don't want it to be. So the issue is always going to be, can we demonstrate sustainability in revenue? If we kind of go back and step back to the most recent budget and look at what the administration outlined, it indicated in many instances that going forward, government will be receiving record levels of revenue, way more than has ever been collected in the past. It has also sought to contain in a very fundamental way the level of expenditure. So expenditure is basically flat, somewhere around $3 billion, while revenue is increasing, fluctuating and trending up to $4 billion in a couple of years from now. And that sends a positive story. It is a positive story on paper, because it's basically saying that given our revenue status now, that, and by now I mean the year that we're wrapping up, we don't actually kind of put the bow on that totally yet. So that would be 22, 23, still waiting on the final numbers. We heard a little bit of information that VAT did not actually get to the level that we anticipated, but there were some compensating streams, and that would be a good thing. The deficit is expected to be within the range which was anticipated and projected, and that remains a good thing. So when we compare with where we may settle when we put all of the bow ties, put all of the ties on that particular year, 22, 23, dot all the I's and cross all the T's, this year that we are currently in, this fiscal year, is anticipated to be better. And by better, I mean that our deficit is expected to be lower. It's going to reduce. The following year, it's going to reduce. And then we're going to bounce up into a deficit. So why am I making the point on these issues? We're talking about the extent to which the rollover risk faced by the Bahamas can be affected. And of course, we want it to be positively impacted. And there are a couple of things which are going to impact that. One, we need a rating agency to come and say, we are being upgraded. But that upgrade, or that potential upgrade, is going to be a function of performance. And the trajectory outlined in the budget, and realizing those, if we were to realize those, then that's going to be a good signaling going to rating agencies and others and going to the market, which says, yes, the Bahamas is improving its ability, its capacity to afford to pay the debt down and to pay the cost of debt. And this is important. It's absolutely critically important when one considers that of the $3 billion in expenditure which is projected for this current fiscal, $6 billion, at least, that was the amount at the time it was projected. I'm going to say a little bit more about that. But $600 million, that's one-fifth or 20% of the budget, will go to pay the cost of debt. Now, to be balanced, and so that everybody understands and there's no frenzy, a portion of that debt is domestic. So I think, based on the numbers that I saw, maybe a little bit over half of that $600 million will go to external debts, yeah, and the rest of it will pay the domestic debt. Domestic debt is cheaper than the external debt. And that is where the challenge lies. As I indicated to you, about $600 million in totality goes to pay, off the budget goes to pay, was projected to go to pay interest on loans. It was before the Fed, the U.S. Federal Reserve, increased its reference rate twice by adding 25 basis points each time, which means that it's now up to 50 additional basis points. So immediately, the projected amount that we have in the budget is now larger. That number is no longer accurate. It's going to be more. And there is signaling that the Federal Reserve is still willing before the end of 2023. And we hope this is not the case. The U.S. economy is operating in a really schizophrenic manner. Has been since COVID. I believe that it caught COVID and has been operating crazily ever since. But while, if you remember, maybe a year ago, 18 months ago, the United States was supposed to be in a recession and then a depression, and then that didn't happen, and all of the things which are going negatively, and then they have a very robust job market, adding significant amount of jobs month over month, quarter over quarter so far this year. So that being the case, it means that if jobs are being added as robustly as the reports, means people are making more money, more and more persons are being employed, and consequently, you could find people with more disposable income, which would then drive demand. That means people want to buy more goods and services, and as a result of wanting to buy more goods and services, it could have an adverse impact on inflation, which the authorities are trying to tame, and consequently, in order to fix that inflation, they may be forced again to raise interest rates. And that's kind of, you know, we're holding our fingers crossed that that type of scenario doesn't actually play out. But that's what we're working with. So overall, for this fiscal year, the Bahamas could find itself a little bit more up on its cost of debt. But of course, we would expect and anticipate that the authorities would make some adjustments someplace else. So if all of that holds true, if all of that holds positive, then the Bahamas is well on its way to signaling a better set of circumstances than in 2022-2023, and that well for the rollover risk. Won't fix it. I don't think in 2023-24 will make a significant shift, but an important move nonetheless. I'll put it this way. It's kind of like, you know, there's a saying that cow doesn't know the use of its tail until it loses it, right? So while we may not have a massive seismic shift to the positive, if the negative was to happen, that would be seismic. And consequently, not moving into the negative is a huge, major win in and of itself. So we have to get there. And there are some signals that we're moving in that direction. So that's a positive. Now, as we speak, some of the numbers for 2022-2023 are lagging. It's a state of affairs which sometimes a little bit uncomfortable if you are discussing and talking about these things. I think we should be putting out numbers more rapidly, you know, at September, with a fiscal year ending June. I think the numbers should have been out by now. They should have been done, wrapped up, and dusted, and so we know exactly for sure where the deficit has terminated. But we don't know that yet. But we are keeping our fingers crossed that even if it didn't come in exactly at the 560, if that was a number, it's not too far off, and it's better. That's what we're hoping for. So if all of that holds, that number holds, and then what's taking place today works to in the positive, then the Bahamas will now start to signal to the market that we are getting better at what we're doing, and consequently, you now need to start rethinking about the premium that you're wanting to charge or willing to charge us on our cost of debt. And so my response to the reporter was, forget about the credit market as a generic entity. The analysis, or an accurate analysis from my point of view, is to consider the Bahamas' state of affairs within the confines of the market. Because you look at it this way, if the Bahamas was today, it could go into the market and borrow way, way cheaper than the indicative rates at which its debt is trending right now. So even if one makes the argument that the market itself is deteriorating, it's more potent to consider where the Bahamas' credit worthiness lies versus the state of the market. Because I know there are countries out there who would be like AAA rating, who are going to be borrowing at way, way cheaper than we can at this moment. And why is it important not to conflate the state of the market as a broad macro entity with the circumstances of the Bahamas, which is driving its state of affairs? Why is that important? Because I believe problem definition is very, very important. If you're going to talk about a problem, then the narrative need to be set on a firm and accurate foundation. So we should not be saying the Bahamas is unable to because the market is, while there is some argument that can be squeezed in that space, it is more accurate to say the Bahamas is unable to because of its current state of affairs. And that immediately tells you that our solution lies in fixing the state of affairs, as opposed to thinking that we need to sit back and wait until the market is no longer deteriorating. Because even when the market is no longer deteriorating, we, without a change in our circumstance, current circumstance, we will still be borrowing at significant premium. So you see what I'm saying? You see what I'm getting? So when the IDB defined the problem the Bahamas was facing as being largely a function of the deteriorating credit market, I thought, no, maybe we shouldn't think about it like that. We should think about it in what I consider to be the real term, that the rollover risk, the challenge faced by the Bahamas, is a function of its current credit worthiness. And that is kind of what everybody is working on to fix, I would hope. All of the stuff, all of the plans that we've heard, all of the discussion coming out of the government says that that is the case. And so everybody should be working on that. So that is where we are. And the extent to which that is trending positively, and I make the argument that it is up to now, certainly not looking to the negative, then we are kind of on the way to having that better conversation come 2020, end of 2023, 2024 fiscal year. But there are many, there's a multiplicity of other factors which kind of blend into this, which kind of impact and affect this. And if we're going to solve it, like me and you, we'll solve it right here on the show. Of course, remember, you can call us at 323-6232, 325-4316, 325-4259. So if we're going to solve it, what we need to do is as I'm attempting here, is kind of take the pieces apart, and then we're going to lock it back up together and see exactly where we are and how we can get to that better picture. Because failing to solve the rollover risk, and we don't have to reduce it, you know. We don't. The rollover risk basically says the individual who is lending to you is kind of unwilling to do so. They're not running to lend to you. But they will lend to you if they can convince you to borrow from them at a particular rate. Simple. They see you as a particular risk, as risky. And they ask for a premium in compensation for that risk. And if you're willing to pay that premium, then you get the money. The big problem is, as we speak, is that I don't think prudence would dictate that the Bahamas takes the premium which are indicative in the level at which its debt is trading currently. It needs better rate. And hence, you would have noticed, if you paid attention to the discussion in the budget, where there was alluding to the fact that, you know, administration will work with IDB and other organizations, will speak with multilateral lending agencies in order to ask debt which may be available to be taken on. And in the instance where the multilaterals aren't able to lend, then using those other agencies who can lend value by helping us to enhance our credit risk. So you have credit risk enhancement, which would then result in us borrowing cheaper. This was done before with the IDB, where through the IDB support, the Bahamas was at one point able to get loan at a significant discount compared to where the market would have placed it at that point in time. I can't remember the exact amount, but it was a significant shift. So that is one aspect to it. So we definitely understand that we have a challenge with our rollover risk. We therefore also definitely understand that debt, our debt stock, represents our most significant challenge going forward. It has been like that. I've said it many times. And it's going to continue to be like that for a while. But we also are seeking to understand that there are factors at play which could potentially improve that. And our assessment, our exploration, our analysis is to kind of suss out, seek out, search out where we are with that and how that could concretize at the end of the day. So that's point number one. Point number one, the Bahamas has a significantly higher than a rollover risk. And as the IDB pointed out, given the maturities starting 2024 all the way up to 2032, I think, that will represent some obstacles for the country. And I agree with that. I am proposing, though, that we do not assess this from the basis of the market impacting the Bahamas, but rather where the Bahamas is on that creditworthiness continuum and what things are at play which could fix that. At the end of the day, economic performance, growth is going to be so fundamental and important. And that's basically what we're saying. If we can do the things which have been highlighted in the budget and do even better than was projected, then we're going to be good. Not perfect, not out of the woods by any means. By good, I mean that we are going to be trending into the positive. And any conversation, any narrative which is going to be trending positively, is going to have a beneficial impact on the overall rollover risk. We're going to take a break here, and when we come back, we are going to take a look at item number two, because there is a connection. Item number two speaks to the reshuffle of the cabinet, how some persons see it. Some people have negative comments. Some persons have positive comments. Some persons are not sure. What I'm going to seek to do on the other side of the break is to indicate to you the importance of the shuffle and why it is fundamentally, fundamentally critical that the position espoused by the Prime Minister becomes factual. You listen to The Essentials, The Reset. Don't move. Come right back.
Girl, Junior just showed me Bulla Boy in his phone.
What you mean? He take picture of that good for nothing boy?
Shh, you don't want Bulla hair. You say that. You know she always say that's my good child.
So what he doing in Junior phone?
Oh, he there because the police looking for him. He on that wanted list.
Wanted persons in your phone now?
Yes, child. And when police won't find anybody quick, after something happened, they can send picture direct to your phone. Go to Google Play or App Store and search for Crack Crime Bahamas, then pick install and it will go straight to your phone.
There is also a section on missing persons.
Yes, girl. Everybody needs to get this app so police can tell us right away when these people go missing. Just like an alert system.
Yes, it has numbers for Crime Stoppers Bahamas so you can call and nobody knows it's you. Call directly to Miami and give the information without giving your name or anything about you. I tried the other day and when I hear Junior and his boys talking about where they hide those guns, I walk quick around the corner and call that number.
Call 328-8477 from Nassau or 242-300-8477 from the Family Islands.
Next Level Solutions. Next Level Solutions. Solutions. At Next Level Solutions, we assist companies and organizations to understand and strategically resolve governance, risk, compliance, regulatory, finance, and operational challenges, maximize their performance and grow. Next Level Solutions, a dynamic consultancy built on experiential knowledge. For further details on our service offerings, visit nlsolutionsbahamas.com or call 376-8951. Next Level Solutions, practical solutions delivered.
And welcome back to The Essentials. As we indicated before, we had a guest who was coming from supposed to be speaking to us from Rwanda. Clearly we have some mix-up in the time. You know, there's a difference in the time zone, and so she's just indicating that she is here, but we'll have to reschedule to do this at another time. I'm sure you definitely will want to hear from her, and I think we got some timelines mix up, but anyway, we were talking about the state of affairs of the country. And we got to the place where we looked at what the rollover risk was and how that may be impacting us as a country. And now we want to kind of delve into this issue of the cabinet shuffle. When these things happen, I personally am not getting into the, you know, the real underbelly, because, you know, there's always something which drives these decisions. When you look across the board at the number of changes, you know, there was one change and then a second change which were fundamental, important, and then that kind of triggered some other things and made some other moves. But that's not what is important for me. You know, who went where, who doing what. What is most important in tying it to this thing is the fact that the Prime Minister has outlined that the changes necessary, the changes made are necessary for the continuation of the policy positions of the administration. So this is how I tie it up, right? Based on what we discussed before, based on the point before, are we in a position to get the policy positions wrong? Are we? And the easy answer to that is absolutely not. We can't do that. There's no way we can afford to get it wrong. If everything which has been projected to terminate in economic and financial terms in the budget hinges on the performance of one ministry or another, then clearly, if something isn't going as expected, if things aren't playing out consistent with the way the Prime Minister, because he said so, it is the continuation of the policies of administration, the administration that he leads. So if those things aren't tying up, then they could eventually have an adverse impact on the overall state of affairs of the country. So we have to now start to think in real terms. If everything which was planned from June 2023 is moving along nicely, that's the report that we got. If those things are moving along nicely, but somewhere in there, in the considered wisdom of the Prime Minister and those who advise him and those who sit within his circle, there is a need for a change, then that's a signaling that potentially something could happen which could impact the trajectory, which could kind of throw that flow offline, off course. And so taking the administration, the Prime Minister, at face value, the adjustments are designed to move the policy along and, I guess, enhance, advance, expand, widen. But at the end of the day, to get to the place where it is either better or as expected, or look at differently, it must be that the moves were made to ensure that there wasn't going to be, at the end of the day, a termination of anything which is going to be adverse to where we need to be. I made a point earlier that the Bahamas performance is going to hold significant signal, Lynn, which is going to affect its ability to secure or reschedule its debt and so on, so forth going forward, and also to impact the cost thereof, because certainly we want that cost to be reduced. Because the more the costs go up, is the less money which is going to be available to be spent on other areas. As I mentioned at the top of the discussion, 20% already is earmarked for lending. A portion of that is going out of the country. So even when we can make the argument that the portion which stays here is not so bad, and it's debt, you know, you already have the money, so you have to pay for it. You have to pay to use it. So it's not all a bad thing as long as we spent the money and use it wisely and it was productively spent, then that should be fine. But the cost is still high. So how does these changes figure into what we're talking about? So there were some changes at the Ministry of Works, some changes at immigration. We have now a new styling of a ministry, which is going to be energy. I think it's energy and transport. We have a new minister of agriculture, and there's some shift between some other ministries. And there was, of course, what would be considered promotions in one or two other ministries. But not much of change. I think it's the public service ministry that didn't really create much change. The individual was already in that ministry as a minister of state, now the full-fledged minister. But for those ministries which have the potential to create costs on the budget, to drive costs higher than was initially projected, or to create an environment in which the overall risk profile of the country doesn't become more favorable, then that could represent a problem for us, for the country, for the administration. So when the Prime Minister labeled this as the changes designed to positively affect the continuation or the realization of policies, then we have to take that at face value, and we have to now start to ask ourselves, can we afford for him to be wrong in that pronouncement? So if we take a hop and a skip over to the views of the opposition in this instance, where they say, well, guess what? You know, this kind of have some tinges of desperation attached to it. If that is true, then the things which we desire to achieve are not going to be achieved. So again, while we can understand why that would be laid out by the opposition, can we afford for them to be right? Can the country afford for them to be right? And the answer to that is no. But they could be. But the country should not want them to be right. It should want the government to be able to achieve its policy position positively, which is going to have that positive knock-on impact on the rest of the fiscal year and the years projected outwards. What does that mean, therefore? And this is just from my perspective. What does that mean? The way I see it is this. That we must admit we are in a challenge circumstance. That is, by we, I mean the administration and the opposition and everybody else, the citizens and residents. We should admit that. We're in a challenge circumstances. There are some things which are happening with in energy, for example, which is could represent problems for the country. And those need to be arrested. Those need to be fixed. So we are really at a moment where I believe that maybe the first in a long time, maybe the first ever, I don't know, don't really follow things that closely. But it may beg a moment where there is closer collaboration between the two sides. Because at the end of the day, this really is about, will the Bahamas win? Will the Bahamas win? If the policies, if the revenue isn't able to come in at the levels projected, the Bahamas is going to lose. It therefore means that every single ministry, every single productive sector of the economy needs to be firing on all cylinders. We need to, and by we I mean the entire country, we need to be working in concert in a way which is going to move the country forward. So the private sector, the public sector supporting the private sector working hard and innovating and creating jobs and so on and so forth, as we see with the boom in tourism, and we are going to come to that in a bit. We have to work as hard as we can to leverage whatsoever is presented in the environment to make sure that at the end of the day, the best possible outcome emerges. The best possible outcome emerges. Plain and simple as that. Here is why we cannot afford for the intention, stated intention, of the administration to not be realized. Because if we get to that place where we do not meet our targets in terms of the deficit which has been set, if we get to the place where the type of gains that we anticipated from, say, agriculture, we know tourism is doing well, that we expected from agriculture, that was one of the areas which have been changed. If we don't get the uplift necessary, or if it presents additional costs than was projected, then that will be a challenge. If we don't get to the place where the infrastructure of the country is at a reasonable, accepted level, and there is an arresting of the challenges faced within the energy sector, maybe the most important, well, certainly the most important aspect of this all, If those are not realized or argued differently, if they're managed in such a way or not managed in a way which cause there to be additional costs, then the discussion we had earlier where we talk about the whole issue of the rollover risk and what that represents is going to be challenging for the country, because it means that the profile isn't going to change. We will be borrowing at the same levels or increased levels. And chances are, the rating agencies may wish to look at us again in an adverse way. And we absolutely cannot afford that. Not at this moment. If the Bahamas, this is my position, open to be challenged, and I'm willing to argue with any challenger on this. If the Bahamas fails in 2023-24 and maybe 24-25, the rest of this fiscal, and certainly the next fiscal is the one which is supposed to concretize all of the plans which are on the table. If we were to fail, the costs which would advance maybe way into the near to midterm, over maybe the next 5-6 years, maybe even up to 10 years, may be just a little bit too much for the country to bear. On the back of this inflection point with high debt at a time when the cost is significant to us, coming off the back of a pandemic, and in some ways struggling to demonstrate the sustainability of overall government revenue. It can happen. We're hoping that it will happen. The plans have been outlined. But all I'm saying is this, that regardless of where you stand or you sit in this moment, the bigger issue is whether the Bahamas will win or lose. I understand all of the other players. I understand all of the other challenges. One challenger on one side and another one on the other side. I understand to some level and appreciate the politics of it all. But my intent here is to draw us to a higher level of thinking, a higher level of appreciation, of analysis, and ask ourselves the question, if we were to get it wrong in this moment, what is going to be the cost into the future? And whether by losing time in this moment, that cause is not going to be magnified. It's going to move exponentially as a result. So getting it wrong now doesn't create any winners, neither right now or into the future, because it becomes more difficult. It will become more difficult. My conclusion, my view, I honestly believe it. It will become more difficult to manage, to lead, to govern, to grow the economy, to facilitate the private sector, to operate in an environment where taxes don't need to increase. It will become absolutely more difficult for those things to be the case if we get it wrong over the next 18 months. And that is why, when we look at the decisions of the Prime Minister in reshuffling the cabinet, whether you agree with it, yes or no, whether you are from a different political persuasion or you just think based on your considered intellect that the wrong thing was done, you have to, at some point, get to the place where you start to step back and ask yourself, can we afford for them to be wrong? Can we afford for them to not get it right? Can, regardless of our views, regardless of where we stand, regardless of where we sit, regardless of what sort of political persuasion we have, regardless of what we think is going to happen in the next 3 years, can we afford to get it wrong? And if it did go wrong, can we afford the price of it being wrong? I believe the answer to that last question is no. The cost is going to be just way too much. Now, there's no guarantee that everything is going to be right and hunky-dory. The only point I'm making is that at this point in time, I believe persons should come together. There should be more bipartisan interactions. There should be broader and deeper discussions around the issues, other than simply sometimes, you know, we talk about it publicly, we talk about it in social media, and often we get hung up on the personalities. But I believe that we need to dig just a little deeper into what is happening here, what gives, what is at risk, what is at stake, where is the big prize, or what is the big thing that we could lose. What is it? And if we were to make that analysis, and if we were to take it very seriously, then we would now start to understand if the points I made at the beginning, where we appreciate the state that the country is in, and the fact that the whole economic setup at this point in time is not as firm, not as strong as we want it to be. But with some positive outcomes, it could change significantly. Like I said, it's not going to change overnight. It's not going to create seismic shift. But the opposite will be seismic. Anything which trends to the negative will have a huge, significant impact on that state of affairs. Anything which is trending to the positive is going to create incremental shifts in the first instance, but that incremental shift is laying or firming up the foundation on which we need to go forward. It's absolutely, absolutely important that we understand that. So my first point is the Bahamas have a significant rollover risk at this point in time, or at least the rollover risk is at a level as indicated by the IDB, where it's not going to be fully comfortable going forward. The current administration, in its wisdom, has called for a pause and made some adjustment to its policy-making machinery. And that pause, those changes cannot be divorced from the underlying circumstances of the country, the economic circumstances of the country, of which the rollover risk, as stated by the IDB, as discussed by others, is a manifestation of underlying challenges. So it cannot be divorced from it. It has to be where the things which have been done, the changes which have been made, the expectations which have been created will move to the positive, will create results, positive results, results which will cause the circumstance we described prior to be better or at least not any at all worse. And that therefore takes us to our last point, the performance of the tourism industry at the moment. So we're going to take a break here, and when we come back, we're going to get into that and tie this nice up. And we're there at the end, hopefully we will see why every single aspect of this is connected. Nothing is abstract. And if we start to reason, I believe, in this way, I think we have a better, a greater, a deeper appreciation of the role that each of us can play in moving the country along the path, which is going to be beneficial for all of us in the longer term. This is The Essentials, The Reset. Don't move. Come right back.
Your blessings all I need. Blessings come from me.
Rakepela nga kweba zisa Awe bilibino Obi manjinye la mutegera nyo Yekwe ya subisa Lichendi kwa tako chila wumukisa Elana subisa Biwendi ninyanga upatewo Atifuruma Nimugumu kuwa wasoseo Nebiti mbaba tega Teba manji titawa kudemu Kala kuli miro ya kuni mira Abigwe moye bitimba Bachimanye ni mwenye ya isolio I'm blessed in village and town
More blessings
My blessings everywhere Next Level Solutions Next Level Solutions Solutions At Next Level Solutions, we assist companies and organizations to understand and strategically resolve governance, risks, compliance, regulatory, finance, and operational challenges, maximize their performance and grow. Next Level Solutions, a dynamic consultancy built on experiential knowledge. For further details on our service offerings, visit nlsolutionsbahamas.com or call 376-8951. Next Level Solutions. Practical solutions delivered.
This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.
We praise. Come on. We praise your name. We praise your name. We praise your name. We praise your name. We praise.
And welcome back as you listen to the songs being played. Those were the songs we had prepared for our guest all the way from Rwanda, originally from Uganda, but she is currently living in Rwanda, radio personality, Miss Rebecca. I'm going to be careful with the second name. Make sure that I get that absolutely right, because we will have to make some arrangement for her to be back here working with our good friend landlord. Her name is Rebecca Namitala, and she is widely referred to as Lady Bezo. started out in radio at the age of 16. It's a very, very, she has a very, very interesting story. She's a Christian. She does both gospel and she works in a secular environment. But fantastic story, fantastic story. Something which I know would have been empowering and inspiring this evening, but that was not to be. So we made the shift and we'll make the arrangement and hopefully we'll have her and you will hear her story. Big story, worthy of listening to. And she has a big heart for young people, people who are into music, people who have aspiration of being in radio. So you never know. You never know where you end up. Listen out for when we make that announcement again. So we touch on the rollover risk of the Bahamas, kind of basically using that as a proxy for dealing with the debt and the economic circumstance of the country. Then we touch on the shuffle of the cabinet. We didn't get into the politics or the things which persons discuss normally, you know, and sometimes I think honestly take a little bit too far sometimes. But we kind of try to lay out in a fundamental way what that represent as part of a continuum, a part of the continuum of the planning for the economic success of the country. So the last part of it I want to touch on, and these are not the entire picture. These are not every single aspect that we could touch on, but we use them as proxies to give some insight and to create some point of reference as to exactly what we should be looking for, what we should be anticipating. So, a press release came out, I think, on the 5th of September, and it spoke about the Bahamas experiencing explosive growth in visitor arrival numbers. Explosive growth. So we are well aware that tourism is the Bahamas' number one industry, most significant foreign currency earner, followed by banking, financial services. So any news which is styled like this must be positive, must be to the positive. So if you string this and tie this back to where we start the conversation, remember some things are the way they are. The government took a pause because it wants to ensure that the plans that it have in place, which it is convinced work, continue. And now we are hearing that the performance of the number one industry is at a high level. So this augurs well for that perception. This is going to make the circumstance we start with better than it was, as long as this maintains and is sustained into subsequent years. So the numbers talk about the performance for the first 7 months of the year, where stopover visitors or people who arrive by air is 1.1 million, compared to last year was a total of 1.4 million, almost 1.5. So 7 months in, we are at 1.1. For the 12 months of last year, it was 1.47. So we have another 5 months to produce just over 300 plus thousand to equal last year's performance. That is positive. Air persons arriving by air are usually individuals who are stopover visitors. The other persons who come by the cruise ship come to this morning and they go back. But overall, the total amount of visitors for the year, 7 months to date, right across the whole country, is 5.89 million. Record breaking pace. So this is saying that if this continues, if the tourism industry continue to operate at such a high level? Because remember, we expected, we didn't expect it. There was concern that the reconsolidation coming out of the pandemic was going to be okay, but not as strong. And then there was clear evidence that it's going to be better than expected, start to operate better than expected, and then on par, on target to eclipse 2019 being one of the best years in visitor arrival in the country. That was before the pandemic. So now after the pandemic, the reconsolidation is taking place. And we are now seeing numbers which suggest that those are going to be surpassed. And the critical number which need to be surpassed, in my mind, is those persons who arrive by airplane. Because those are the individuals who are putting heads in beds. They're the stopover visitors. What is also important is information coming out of this press release, which says that the average daily rates, that is the amount that people pay to stay, has increased. Now, I do not know how that immediately translates into taxes. I'm going to be honest with you. I do not immediately know how that average rate translate to taxes is something which I definitely need to check out and drill into. But if the rates are up, it's positive. It has to be a good thing. Either the government is getting what the government gets, not making any more, but the government isn't going to be worse off if the rates are up. So at a minimum, we're not doing worse. It also speaks to the fact that room revenues, which may be the point of reference for taxes, because I'm sure there are taxes being charged, value-added tax or whatsoever else there is being charged on room revenue. That is up by 42% over the same period for 2022. That's a significant number. 59% room daily rates, average daily rates up compared to 2019. That's an important year. That was the record year. So to be up over 2019 is a good thing at 59%. And the room rates revenues are up 42% above the best year that we had experienced. One other thing which I tease out of this, which I think is maybe something to pay attention to, is the fact that more than 60% of the visitors, whether they come by plane or they came by cruise ship, were here for the first time, came to the Bahamas for the first time. What might that mean for all we've been talking about and the need for sustainability? Well, if persons are coming for the first time, and hopefully we give them, the greatest of hospitality, customer service is at the highest possible level, those persons are likely to return. So if an individual come for 10 times, you know they're coming back 11 times. They already sold. They're always going to come here. You know, 3 or 4 times, maybe next time they decide, well, I am going someplace else. If they're coming for the first time, they get great service, they like the Bahamas, they enjoy themselves, then chances are they will come back another time. If you have 60%, and if a portion of that 60% is embedded in, say, the cruise ship portion of the travel, the visitors, and we can convert them to stopover visitors, they are going to become more profitable for the country, certainly for the sector. They're going to become more profitable for the country, and consequently, we ought to be taking in greater revenue. It therefore means that since they come this year, they're not going to come back again until next year, and hopefully they come back for a third time the following year. It means that we're creating a baseline in terms of performance. So we assume that we will be able to maintain the numbers that we've seen now, because as was pointed out in this press release, we have often talked about the fact that the numbers will come back because there's a pent-up demand for traveling. Well, after a while, I don't know if that while is here yet, but the minister in his quote in this particular press release said, well, you know, I think we need to now start to think beyond pent-up demand. I can't say if we're there yet. I'm not an expert in that industry. But at some point in time, if we are seeing sustained increases, so you see 59% increase over 2022. That's what the numbers are. And 30% over 2019. And the expectation was that, as I think it was the IMF and some other agencies say, as we get into 2024, we are going to see that reconsolidation kind of start to plateau, yeah, and possibly fall off. But if we are seeing the momentum which the momentum we are currently experiencing dragged further than was originally projected, originally speculated, because oftentimes we are kind of speculating on these things. It's going deeper and deeper into the end of 2023. It therefore means that it's likely to filter and spill over deeper into 2024. Then that is a huge positive. If the number one industry is therefore doing this well, and if the number one industry can sustain this performance into the next fiscal, and that can then again spill over into the following fiscal, then there could be some significantly important good news to write home about. There could be some seriously positive messaging which we can send to the rating agencies. As long as the other sectors are all in their own, as long as there's no decline in other places, as long as we are seeing improvement, and this is why, and I'm going to stitch it together right here, this is why I say to you, the issues we face in the first instance are connected with the shuffle in the cabinet, is connected with the future. Because not only was there no change to the Ministry of Tourism, which is having all of this big driver, there were changes elsewhere. So if those other areas do not perform, or if they become worse, then the gains that we are realizing through tourism could be lost in a macro sense when we put everything into a single basket. So I'm hoping that you start to see and appreciate where we are and how our economic circumstance tie every single aspect of this together, which therefore makes the argument, or at least help to make the argument, that we as a collective must be committed to all aspects of this going properly. As an example, I mentioned the fact that there were no changes in tourism. But if you go to this press release, the press release of September 5, released by the Ministry of Tourism, embedded towards the end are kind of one, but maybe break up into two different segments, which are policy positions, which the minister is explaining, Deputy Prime Minister Chester Cooper, that restructuring which is taking place in the Tourism Development Corporation will present entrepreneurship opportunities for Bahamians. So there are some policy positions which are being driven, some things which are changing, some initiatives, some plans, some programs, which will create entrepreneurship opportunities for Bahamians in the tourism sector. Secondly, he speaks to the fact that there are great jobs and career opportunities to be had in tourism, but there is also massive potential for ownership. See, this is another tie-in again with where we're going or where we must go. So tourism is booming. But if the local domestic investors or local players are not actively participating in the industry at a critical level, the value that the country is going to glean on a sustainable basis is not going to be there. The proverbial of every dollar coming, 80 cents goes out, will remain the case. So a policy position is emerging from this discussion where he says there's also massive potential for ownership. And he goes on to say that the government is putting in place systems to allow Bahamians access to the training, to the certification, support, and capital. Very important. They need to take advantage of the country's popularity as a tourism destination. That, my friend, is one of the best ways, I think, of stitching this all together. You have your best performing industry providing the greatest value and at this moment booming at its highest level. There have to be programs. There have to be means and ways of ensuring that the local population, the local players, domestic investors are gleaning maximum benefit. Because that is, as the way I refer to it, domesticating more of the value of the impact from this particular industry. So all of this are tied together. Who is going to drive the policy? And I'm using this as an example. Who is going to drive the policy? Well, the people who sit around the cabinet table, the government, minister official, the ministers of state, the permanent secretaries, the cabinet secretaries, those persons. They are the ones who are going to have to drive the policy position in all the ministries. The ones which had changes and the ones with no changes. And those policy positions, that work which has been done, those programs which are going to emerge, will ultimately impact the productivity, the overall performance of the country as an economic unit. And that performance as an economic unit is going to send the signal, one way or the other, that the Bahamas is either in a better position going forward, better able to afford its debt, and therefore should be seen as a better risk, or it will send a message in the opposite. We are open for something moving in the positive. And so consequently, when we look at all this, I want you, if you have up to now done that, to divorce yourself from the fact that these things are abstract, and to marry yourself to the idea that if the Bahamas get these things wrong at any level, all at the disparate level, the rollover risk, the cabinet performance, which includes the shuffle and the expectation and the performance of the tourism industry and our inability to have that kind of flow out to local investors, to local players, to local population. If these things don't all come together, the Bahamas is going to be worse off for it. And so our hope, our wish, our prayer is that they all play to our benefit. And we all understand that every single one of us have a part to play, a role to play in making this happen. So all that is left to say right now is pay attention. Pay attention to what is happening. We always seek to end the show by saying, do not allow your greatness to become a victim of your unwillingness to change. Do not allow the Bahamas' greatness to become a victim of our unwillingness to make changes, either in the way we do things or the way we look at things. So I want you to be good, walk good, take care of yourself. One love and Ubuntu. Good night.